From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz-Pena with a local and statewide news update. State public health experts gathered Wednesday to discuss the latest science and the medical response to COVID-19. They talked about the mechanics of masks and how they help to prevent the spread of the virus. State epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin explained that the virus particles are very small, but they hitch a ride with a person's larger respiratory droplets in order to infect someone else.
So what we know is that when I cough or I sneeze or even I'm talking or I'm singing into a mask, I'm going to catch a lot of those larger respiratory droplets and prevent transmission that way.
The state's chief medical officer, Dr. Ann Zink, answered questions about how businesses can safely operate during the pandemic and what they can do when customers don't cooperate.
We get asked a lot of legal questions. We're not lawyers. But in general, I would tell you that businesses have the ability to require shirt, shoes, pants before you come in, and you have the ability to require a mask of someone coming in.
Zink suggested that business owners talk to their staff and potentially to their lawyers about how to enforce mask policies. The state reported 41 new cases of COVID-19 by the end of the day Tuesday. Neiman Marcus is one of the clothing retailers that's seen a decline in sales because of the coronavirus. The company filed for bankruptcy in early May, just weeks after it was sued by Sealaska Heritage Institute. The company was selling a so-called Raven's Tail knitted coat on its website, which the institute alleges is a copy of a notable Alaska Native weaver's design. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of what's going on with the potentially landmark case.
Lily Hope remembers seeing her mother's piece hanging at an art show at the Heard Museum in Phoenix. The robe is called Discovering the Angles of an Electrified Heart, and it won first place. Hope's mom, Clarissa Rizal, died in 2016, and Hope's family later had some of that work copyrighted. Not long after that, Hope got a message from some friends. They sent links to multiple websites, including Neiman Marcus. The company was selling a very similar-looking garment to the piece her mother wove. Hope's immediate thought...
What are they thinking? What makes someone think that that's okay?
Raven's Tail weaving has been practiced by Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people for hundreds of years. Rizal has been credited as an important influence on reviving the tradition. Hope was taught to weave by her mother and is now a weaver herself. The Raven's Tail knitted coat, retailing for more than $2,500, features the same bold geometric pattern seen in Northwest Coast weaving. Hope says she also recognized flourishes that were distinctly her mother's. And as the website links to the coat kept filling up her inbox, she wasn't sure what to do.
With each one of them, I was like, yep, I've seen it. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I wonder if there would be something to do about it.
Hope met on the phone with Sealaska Heritage Institute in Juneau. And she says they decided to take a stand.
It doesn't feel good as an Indigenous artist to consider that the work I make could be mass-produced.
Sealaska Heritage Institute sued Neiman Marcus in the spring for alleged copyright infringement and violating the Indian Arts and Crafts Act, a law that ensures products marketed as Native American or Native Alaskan are authentic. President Rosita Worrell called it one of the most blatant examples of cultural appropriation she'd ever seen. The case is thought to be the first time in the U.S. a business has been sued for copying a traditional Indigenous pattern, though it's far from the first time there's been concern over the issue. The Italian company that makes the Raven's Tail knitted coat is described as, quote, paying homage to Native American iconography.
It doesn't work that way because you've taken their property, you've stolen it, and that's the end of the discussion.
That's Jacob Adams, Sealaska Heritage Institute's lawyer on the case. He says copyright law does allow for inspiration.
Well, what is not allowed is copying.
And that's what he thinks is happening with the Raven's Tail knitted coat and other Indigenous patterns and cultural property which have been used to sell products.
This isn't a call to end all external use of these patterns and that. It's a call to do things appropriately.
And Adams thinks there is an example of a corporation doing things appropriately. Disney. This song composed of Sami chants is in the opening of the Princess Saga Frozen and its sequel Frozen 2. For the first film, Disney was accused of whitewashing Indigenous Sami culture. For the second film, the company entered into a legal contract with Sami leaders. Adam says that's an important distinction. This isn't some kind of soft law thing. It's not passive like asking for permission. It's something you must do, recognizing indigenous groups have the right to say no. Adams wants a Sealaska Heritage Institute lawsuit to further that discussion.
Even if we want to do things appropriately, sometimes it's difficult to know how. So, you know, just starting at that basic principle of recognizing these rights, it gives us a roadmap of how to properly engage.
Adam says the Neiman Marcus bankruptcy has complicated things, but the case is still moving forward. Sealaska Heritage Institute's president, Rosita Worrell, didn't want to comment verbally on the ongoing case, but added in writing, she hopes that businesses will develop policies and practices to respect the cultural and intellectual property of Indigenous peoples, and that they would be open to opportunities to collaborate. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Federal wildlife officials are asking the public to be on the lookout for an entangled humpback whale reported near Sitka. They say the best way to help a whale caught up in lines or debris is to call in its location and to keep a safe distance. KCAW's Aaron McKinstry has more.
Whales can get entangled in all kinds of stuff, from anchor lines to fishing gear to shrimp pots, which is what happened with the latest case near Sitka. NOAA Fisheries received a report on June 29th of an entangled humpback just south of Sitka Sound near Tava Island. That's about 8 miles from where the owner of the shrimp pots set the lines the previous Saturday morning. Officials are asking seafaring Sitkans to call the NOAA hotline or the Coast Guard if they spot the entangled whale. Whale entanglements are infrequent in Alaska. NOAA Fisheries reported just 10 sightings statewide in 2018. But most of those occurred in Southeast, and when the giant creatures do get entangled, the results can be deadly. That's according to Alaska's Large Whale Entanglement Response Coordinator, Sadie Wright.
We know that any type of entanglement is a big energy expenditure for whales, so wasted energy dragging all the stuff around. But in worst-case situations, entanglements can lead to the death of the animal.
But the public's responsibility stops at communication, Wright says. Intervention can be dangerous for the whale and for humans. Props can get stuck in lines, and the public doesn't always know the best course of action, like the Good Samaritans that cut buoys off the lines attached to this whale. Buoys actually helped the team's trained responders find large whales and figure out how to free them.
Thank goodness that these Good Samaritans didn't get hurt. While well-intentioned, freeing a 40-ton animal is extremely dangerous for the animal and the would-be rescuer.
The team has specialized equipment that allows them to maintain distance and free the whale if necessary. But Wright says they're hopeful that this guy will free himself.
Based on the speed that this animal was traveling, we think it's a strong and very mobile animal. And we know that most entanglements of large whales conclude with the animal freeing itself. So we're hopeful that this animal is able to do that.
For mariners who want to help prevent entanglements, Wright suggests keeping unmonitored lines out of the water, especially when they're not in use. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Last month was a wet one for Juneau. It was the second wettest June ever recorded with 7.3 inches of rain.
It is well above normal. The normal for the month of June is 3.24 inches, so we're just slightly over 4 inches above normal for the month.
Kimberly Vaughn with the National Weather Service in Juneau says June is normally one of the driest months of the year, but there was a lot of moisture that flowed in from the Gulf of Alaska. There were also 25 days in June in which measurable amounts of rain fell at the Juneau Airport. That ties the record set in 1949. But Vaughn says even that tied record comes with an asterisk.
Every day except for the 30th of June had some sort of precipitation, a trace or more. So actually there was only one day in June without any precipitation.
Vaughn says it will likely be warm and dry in Juneau over the next week, and she warns of potentially increased fire danger as vegetation begins drying out. And Alaska Electric Light and Power customers are expected to experience lower electric bills as a result of surplus energy and a rainy June. The Juneau Empire reported the company's cost of power adjustment is scheduled to lower the current rate beginning Wednesday. The company says wet weather raised low reservoirs back to normal levels, while a decrease in the number of cruise ships using Juneau's harbor will not cause an increase in price for customers in the city. This is KTOO News.